Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Sleater, and Judge Gaetis, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are here for our second case on the oral calendar this morning, and it is A21-0674 in the matter of the welfare of the children of DY parent. Counsel, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal arguments. Counsel for appellant, 5 minutes for rebuttal. If you could please identify yourself and the party you represent for the record when you start your principal arguments, that would be great. And counsel for appellant, we are ready for you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ann Carlson, and I represent the appellant mother, D.Y. We are asking that this court would reverse the district court's order adjudicating her children as in need of protection or services. This is a case that stems from an incident that happened in June of 2020, and the removal was in November of 2020, and the adjudication happened in March of 2021. The evidence relied on by the court to justify removing the children was that mother did not maintain contact with the social worker following her agreeing to participate in a voluntary case plan. The fact that she wasn't participating in a voluntary case plan, that the consequence for not participating in a voluntary case plan would be removal of the children, seemingly makes this not a voluntary case plan. And I don't know how well articulated it is to say this is a voluntary case plan. If you don't participate in it, we go to the district court and we take your children away, even if they are in a safe environment at the time that we locate them. My understanding of these facts is that mother was at a shelter to avoid any potential domestic abuse that might be inflicted on her by the father in this matter. And the children's needs were being met at the shelter, but because mother didn't return the social worker's phone call, the social worker pursued removal and was granted that. Then mother asked for a trial within the 60 days that are mandated by Minnesota Rules of Juvenile Protection Procedure, and that did not happen. That was denied. Mother moved.
Ms. Carlson, if I could just jump in here. I know that one of the issues you're raising before us is the timing of the trial, and you're arguing that it was outside of the time frame provided by the rules, but I do note that your client wanted to have an in-person trial. And so we have sort of, novel issue. This isn't a situation where the trial was just continued, but it was essentially continued at her request because she didn't want to have the trial via Zoom. And I'm just wondering how we should sort of take the pandemic into account and what we should make of her request. Was that a waiver of the issue?
Well, Your Honor, my understanding was that she did decide that she would be comfortable with having a Zoom trial when it was explained to her that the Zoom trial was the only way that she was going to be able to have a trial within the timeframes that are stated by the Rules of Juvenile Protection Procedure within that 60 days. I understand that that happened January 8th. And the court claims or found that it scheduled a trial at the earliest possible time, but that still wasn't within 60 days. It wasn't within 60 days of the EPC or the Emergency Protective Care hearing, and it wasn't within 60 days of mother agreeing to have the trial via Zoom. I don't believe the issue is waived because mother did address the issue in her motion to dismiss.
And then in terms of timing, should we be looking at the time between the request for the Zoom trial or and the actual trial, or should we be looking at the time frame between the request for an in-person trial and the ultimate Zoom trial?
Well, for several reasons, I would argue that the appropriate time to look at is the time between the emergency protective care hearing and when the trial is scheduled, mainly because that is the time frame that's identified by the rules of juvenile protection procedure. 60 days from the emergency protective care hearing, there should be a trial, or the trial should commence. However, I understand that mother did concede to having that in-person trial, or rather having a Zoom trial in January. So the rules look to the need to have that trial within 60 days of the EPC. The facts of this case would indicate that she should have been given a trial at least within 60 days of her agreeing to the fact that she would have the trial by Zoom. And I think that what happened in this case is because of the many delays, the evidence that the court relied on to adjudicate the children as in need of protection or services was stale. The children were not removed.
Carlson,
yes.
Wouldn't the real issue for our review be, as a practical matter, because there's no dispute, it was not with whatever method the trial was held, was not within the 60-day period by the rule, would be what prejudice to your client? And one of the facts, among perhaps others, that jumps out at me is that, as I recall, she discharged, asked the court to discharge her attorney at that January 8 pretrial hearing, and the record indicates she did not retain counsel until later in February. And so for that entire span of time, she would have been unrepresented. It would seem that it would be prejudicial to her to have convened a trial during that time. And then obviously your attorney needs some preparation time. And so it was in March 19, the trial, if I have that date correct. So wouldn't that all suggest that there was no prejudice to your client, especially when you combine that with her statements to social workers that she would not wish to take part in a plan until a trial occurred? So you have those competing. She wasn't willing to do anything that might have allowed her to return the children to her, and combined with the fact she did not have counsel for that significant period of time.
Well, I believe what the court is addressing is compliance with a voluntary case plan that the court didn't have the authority to order, and because there wasn't an adjudication.
And just to clarify, I don't think respondent's making the argument that she was obligated to, but when it comes to prejudice for a delay in the trial, and part of what the argument, as I see from the briefing, is she had no way of having the children returned. Well, obviously she did if she had chose voluntarily to continue to work with Human Services prior to the adjudication. There's always the potential then a children return. And so the point I'm getting at is I'm trying to understand what prejudice there would be in order to have a remedy that appellant seeks of a reversal based on a delay in the 60 days.
Well, Your Honor, my understanding is that she was asking for a trial from the emergency protective care hearing. She didn't start asking for a trial back in, or her initial request for a trial didn't happen on January 8th. She wanted the trial as soon as the children were removed from her care. I think that some of her frustration with the process was that she wasn't given that trial, and that led to her retaining private counsel because she was told that it's not possible to have an in-person trial within the timeframes that are outlined by the rules. The prejudice, although she could have complied with a voluntary case plan, she did not have the children in her care, and the agency had not yet met its burden of proving that there was a reason for the children to be adjudicated as in need of protection or services. I don't know that there was even a basis for removal based on these facts, other than she didn't call back the social worker. So I would argue that she, or I am arguing that she was prejudiced by the fact that the trial didn't happen within 60 days of of the emergency protective care hearing in November. Trial should have happened before that January 8th hearing. And had it happened, she would have started complying with the case plan based on the fact that it was court ordered at an earlier point in time. So I am asking that this court would find that the delay is prejudicial to the mother because it prevented the return of the children at the earliest possible time. The purpose of the rules is to, the rules related to juvenile protection is to strengthen family ties and remove children only when their safety and welfare cannot otherwise be safeguarded. I'm not seeing that this is a case where the children's safety and welfare was not safeguarded at the time of removal. And then by the time it made it to trial, the prejudice is that we're looking at evidence that's 9 months old. Evidence was stale. She was not having contact with the father. And the fact that something happened 9 months prior to the trial that could potentially repeat itself in the future is not a sufficient basis for an adjudication that the children need protection or services. And it's not a sufficient basis for removal, which I understand might not properly be before this court, but the adjudication order is. In addition to that prejudice, the court failed to make clear and specific findings that conform with any of the statutory criteria to adjudicate that is pursuant to Minnesota Statute 260C.007, subdivision 6, that the children, subparent 3, that the children are without necessary food, shelter, or clothing. There are no facts that would suggest that that's the case. They were in a shelter, and as far as the record indicates, their needs were being met.
Ms. Carlson, I want to jump to the statutory provision that it's on its face based on the court's findings seems most directly relevant. And as we know, our review, the requirement is only that one is satisfied. And that's subdivision, parentheses 9, a child is one whose behavior, condition, environment is such as to be dangerous to the child. An injurious or dangerous environment may include, but is not limited to, the exposure of a child to criminal activity in the child's home. The court made significant findings, and in fact, one particular finding that the court made, there's a documented six-year history of domestic abuse. And of course, the one that led to the ultimate, I think, attention to Human Services was the hotel incident in which the children were present, a significant assault that had been reported to your client. Is your client's argument that the court made clearly erroneous findings regarding those significant, that history of assault and that incident of assault, or is it that it, your client's position that as a matter of law, it was an abuse of discretion because that does not fit the statutory basis of that parentheses 9 provision of the statute?
The court is required to address conditions that exist at the time of the trial. And although there was a six-year history, there was a nine-month period where mother was not having contact with the father. At the time that the June incident happened, the agency did not feel that removal of the children was necessary based on mother's then cooperation and willingness to separate herself from the father. And the environment did not become inherently dangerous based on the fact that mother didn't return the social worker's phone calls. The what was dangerous about the environment was that father was abusive to the mother. That did happen back in June.
But so, just to clarify, didn't the court make findings, though, that part of its concern, which might tie into this and other subdivisions, is mother's denial of the domestic assault and or its effect on the children? And of course, after the incident in June of that year, there was a restraining order put in place, which of course would then prohibit such contact.
Your Honor, we are arguing that the district court abused its discretion in finding that there was a dangerous environment that existed at the time that the children were removed from the shelter. The children's needs were being met. The incident occurred 9 months prior. And although I understand that the court made some credibility findings about mother's agreement with whether or not some of these incidents happened, the fact is that she did not allow the children to be in the presence of their father for a period of 9 months leading up to the adjudication. So I understand that what happened in June of 2020 was very unfortunate for this family, but I also see that mother did what she had to do, including ceasing contact with the father and disengaging in that relationship. She moved to her mother's place, and then when that did not continue to seem to be a safe environment, she moved to a women's shelter where, for all intents and purposes, the children's needs were being adequately met, and that environment was safe. I am asking that this court would reverse the district court's order adjudicating the children as in need of protection or services, as the order is based on stale evidence, evidence that was 9 months old at the time of the adjudication. I'm also asking for reversal on the basis that mother was not granted a trial within the timeframes mandated by the Minnesota Rules of Juvenile Protection Procedure. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson. Ms. Johnston.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. I'm Assistant Hennepin County Attorney Elizabeth Johnston. I represent the respondent in this matter. I think I included extensive briefing on the question about the timing of the trial, and so I'm happy to answer any questions, but I think the department's short position on that is that the scheduling of the trial simply did not violate either the rules of juvenile protection procedure or due process for reasons that Your Honors have addressed. Initially, that appellant was part of that scheduling, and as far as we know, we don't have transcripts from those first couple of hearings because they were not ordered. But as far as we know, from the district court's recitation of those hearings and the orders that it issued, essentially appellant was part of the scheduling of this. And the scheduling was due to a combination of everyone's schedules, the pandemic, and her initial request for an in-person trial.
Ms. Johnston, can I just clarify answer a question you said it did not violate the rules. I'm assuming you're referring, I saw you in your briefing reference to Rule 49 and continuance, but am I correct, and that's related to trial, that the trial was set in March and it never changed? And so there was never a finding of the court that there was a best interest need or other need to gather evidence to postpone the trial. It was simply set in March, and that's when it was held. Am I understanding the record correctly?
I think you, as far as we know, since we don't have that transcript, I think you are understanding correctly that was the first available date that they could all come to. And so they did not set sort of a false within timeframe date and then continue it. But once the trial date was asked for.
So we don't know, as you pointed, I'm sorry, I just wanted to clarify that what we don't have in the record, as you pointed out, there's no findings, there's no record of statements made. So we don't know, for instance, if trial by Zoom initially could have been scheduled earlier, as far as we know, because it was scheduled in March. All we know is it does violate the rules. That seems undisputed by the record. It violated the 60-day from the EPC hearing.
Well, respectfully, I would say it does violate the 60 days from the EPC. But I think that given part two, essentially, of that rule, which acknowledges the ability to continue that or change that, I don't know that we know that it violates the rule as a whole. We don't have a record that says whether the district court initially said, we can do this trial within 60 days, but it has to be by Zoom. We won't be able to do it as you request. Accordingly, I'm finding that because of your request, there is good cause for that extension to the date that we're all agreeing to in March. We don't know that because we don't have that transcript. What we do have is an indication that that all parties requested a trial date at the first pretrial hearing, that the district court agreed to set a trial, that the district court nobody could because of the pandemic, accommodate an in-person trial. So they picked a date that they hoped would accommodate that. I don't actually think it would have down the road, but they picked a date that would, and that everyone was in agreement with that. As Your Honor pointed out, appellant had counsel at that point who was different from counsel who eventually objected to this scheduling. And whether we want to call that waiver or maybe a recognition that people's schedules matter, and that in this case, they're simply, they did the best they could to accommodate all of those interests. And that in the meantime, there was, as Your Honor identified, really no prejudice to appellant mother. She had regular hearings. There is always motion practice available. In Hennepin County, there's even a sort of informal motion practice that is available to make modifications to sort of the on-the-ground circumstances pending trial. None of that happened. The hearings happened, and what happened at those hearings, the initial pretrial, the next pretrial, was that the district court affirmed its findings that the petition had stated a prima facie case that a child protection matter existed, and that out-of-home placement was at that point called for, necessary for the children's safety, health, safety, or well-being. The district court affirmed its approval of the voluntary case plan. Those are the ways that appellant mother could have asked for something different to be occurring on the ground. Those things did happen, and there's nothing preventing those things from happening. Accordingly, the scheduling of this trial didn't do anything that prejudiced mother's ability to move forward in this case plan. And I think that, as I lay out, and I think a lot of words in my brief, I think she fails to demonstrate either that the rules were violated in a way that would call for any sort of a remedy, if they were violated at all, or that due process was violated in a way that requires a remedy. If I may, unless there are other questions, I'll turn very briefly to the sort of substantive pieces as opposed to procedural pieces. I think that it's important for Your Honors to note that appellant's portrayal of the issues and concerns in this department is simply too narrow. And that is related to a similarly too narrow concept of when children are presently at risk. As Your Honor, Judge Sleater pointed out, this is not a case where there was one incident that mother, appellant mother, responded appropriately to, and then there were no further issues. This is a case where the issues are that there is a 6-year, pretty horrific history of domestic violence within this relationship, which threatened the children in utero, as well as out of utero when they were in person. And that mother, appellant mother, demonstrated a pattern of, when it got really bad, seeking help, but in relative order, returning to that relationship. She was so badly injured, she went to the hospital and spent 6 days in the hospital saying she fell down the stairs, until, you know, a later event pushed her to make a police report, which she then recanted and refused to go forward with in order to proceed with criminal charges. None of this is unusual in the domestic violence context, and this is not meant to, you know, sort of penalize her for not cooperating with a criminal process. But the child protection interest is in saying, when we see this pattern of behavior, which is returning you as the primary caretaker and also your children to the home and circumstances of this person who is dangerous to you and dangerous to them, that is a concern for the health, safety, and well-being of the children. And it is that larger context which I think matters. Appellant has spent some time trying to emphasize that the evidence was stale. Well, the different from, I think, a criminal case where we really are looking at a very narrow incident within the box. Did it happen on, you know, May 1st at 11 o'clock? When you're talking about child protection, you're talking about, you can be talking about one instance. In this case, we are talking about 6 years up until the date of trial as the pattern of behavior, the context of behavior and of concern that we're looking at. And the law, case law included, requires the court to consider the circumstances at the time of trial. And at the time of trial, what the district court was concerned about was that you had this very long history of violence, which indicates that this is a hard thing for appellant mother. And on the day of trial, she is at most 1 week into some sort of maybe treatment programs, which no one had been able to confirm, and was still in her testimony, minimizing the extent of the violence, minimizing her contact with father, and minimizing, if not dismissing, the extent to which domestic violence, that level of violence, is either simply dangerous or traumatic to children who are exposed to it. And that was a present circumstance. And that was a present circumstance right then that led the district court to be concerned that without an adjudication, without a court order, which in fact is what mother had essentially asked for, she would not participate in services that might help her better understand those things. She would not participate in services that would lead her to not only seek sort of emergency assistance, but figure out a permanent plan for her own and the children's safety. And that's where that is the evidence, that larger context leading up to, and we're still not there, that fits in slightly different ways, but fits in each of the three statutory bases, including the one that Your Honor identified, as well as demonstrates that the children were presently at risk and therefore in need of protection or services, and that it was in their best interest for an adjudication to occur and a case plan to be ordered that would seek to remedy those risks. I'm more than happy to answer any questions, but I don't think I have more words of my own to offer.
Okay, looks like we don't have questions. Thank you, Ms. Johnston. And Ms. Carlson, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. For the record, this is Ann Carlson, and I represent the appellant mother, DY. My understanding of this record is that the reason the children were removed was not because mother was a victim of domestic violence or because the children were being exposed to domestic violence. The facts in June are that the agency involved itself with this family and that in June, mother was agreeable to that. The reason that the children were removed is because mother did not maintain contact with the social worker in September. So it seems disingenuous to argue that this was an ongoing issue at the time of the adjudication when previously, when mother was more cooperative with voluntary services, the agency did not find that it had grounds for removal. And then when it had a difficult time staying in contact with mother, that became the dangerous environment.
Ms. Carlson,
Go ahead.
Judge Leader, go ahead, please.
Well, I just wanted to clarify, Ms. Carlson, isn't it true we're not reviewing the basis for the removal? We're simply reviewing the sufficiency of evidence for an adjudication of CHIPS.
Yes, you're that's correct. We're reviewing the sufficiency of the evidence and whether or not there was sufficient evidence in March of 2021 to adjudicate the children as presently at risk and in need of protection or services.
So otherwise, the only real direct connection with the removal is your point about the scheduling of the trial and the requirement of 60 days from an EPC. But absent that or beyond that, we're simply reviewing the merits of the court's order adjudicating a basis for child protection?
Well, yes, the court is looking at whether or not there's sufficient evidence to adjudicate the child is in need of protection or services, whether that evidence was sufficient in March of 2021. And I'm arguing that the evidence is not sufficient because it was stale and because there was no evidence that at the time of the trial, mother was allowing the children to have any contact with the father. The father was the risk to the children, and she made necessary steps to prevent the children from having any contact with him. So yes, I am arguing that at the time of the adjudication, the evidence was not sufficient to support a CHIPS or to support the CHIPS adjudication, because at that point in time, she was no longer allowing father to be in the presence of the children. And that was the danger to the children. Were there other questions I could answer at this time?
No, my question is answered by that.
I am asking that this court would reverse the CHIPS adjudication. I am asking that this court would find that the delay in having the trial was prejudicial to the mother. It prevented her from caring for her children for a period of time. And it also prevented the agency, it delayed the need for the agency to meet its burden of proof. It seems that the reason that we need to have a CHIPS adjudication, or rather a CHIPS trial within that 60 days, is because by then the agency should be able to show that there is actually a reason for the children's removal. And I think it's a very dangerous precedent to give the agency all the time that it needs to meet that burden of showing that the children should be removed. The court has to address conditions that exist at the time of the trial, and the conditions that existed at the time of this trial were not sufficient to support a CHIPS adjudication. And for that reason, I'm requesting reversal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. A case is submitted.